5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. Watching the Super Bowl one year, I looked down at my hands and noticed I was shaking a bit. Here I was on my couch watching someone else perform, and I was nervous? I was anxious? Stress hormones were flooding my body, speeding up my heart rate and my breathing, while increasing my blood pressure. Again, from my couch. I stopped and laughed for a second, thinking, how in hell do these athletes do it? How does Tom Brady or LeBron James or Daniel Hudson perform at their best with everyone watching and everything on the line? History, fame, teammates, fans, all in one moment, bundled up for you to determine. Again, I remind you, my hands were shaking on my couch with none of this at stake. You may think it's a simple answer that elite athletes are a special breed, but that isn't it. They may have special talent, special skills, but that doesn't necessarily correlate to special mentality. Take Ernie Els, for example, four-time major winner on the PGA Tour, clearly has the skill, right? He's 3 feet away from making par on the first hole of the Masters in 2016, 3 feet away. He missed. And then proceeded to miss five more times. A quintuple bogey on the first hole from 3 feet away. You cannot tell me he forgot how to putt. He wasn't mentally strong enough in that moment. Anna Kournikova, remember her? Photogenic Russian tennis star? She lost the ability to serve. 17 double faults in one set during a match. She didn't forget how to serve. She forgot mentally how to perform. Look up Steve Sachs, Rick Ankiel, Mackie Sasser, Chuck Knobloch, and you'll find more elite athletes with incredible physical skills who are unable to master the mental side of performance. Physical skills are just one part of the equation. What separates the good from the great, and even the greatest, is the mental component. But these athletes don't go it alone. They don't will themselves to be mentally tougher or stronger or more resilient. They have help. Mental skills coaches are changing the way organizations consider their athletes. For a long time, it was a focus on physical strength, nutrition, and repeated practice of game-like conditions. That's how they reached maximum output of their investment in their athletes. These are the things they focused on. But over the last decade or more than that, a greater emphasis has been placed on the mental side, conditioning the athletes with how to think, prepare, execute, and frame their mind. This mental skills training now works in conjunction with strength and conditioning to help the athletes unlock their full potential. To me, this is absolutely fascinating. Unlocking the power of the mind to help the elite skills come through more consistently. But it's not just with top athletes either. Every one of us has the power to tap into our mind in a different way, to frame things, to look at things differently, to understand our process. And there's so much more that goes into it, which is why I couldn't be more excited to have on Hannah Huseman, Philadelphia Phillies mental skills coach. And I'm telling you, we're going to talk a lot about baseball. We're going to talk a lot about her job. We're going to talk a lot about how she works with players, no specific players, but we're going to talk about how she works with players and their approach. But listen to this and put it on your own lens as well. Listen to the processes, listen to the structure, listen to the ideas and the concepts and apply them to yourself. This isn't about just athletes. This is about you. Let's get into it. Here's Hannah. Hi, Hannah. How are you today?
Hi, I am doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I am really so excited to talk to you because this is a direction we haven't really headed on the podcast before, the mental skills side of the industry and what you do and in working with teams and athletes. I think it's so fascinating, and I'm so excited to talk to you about all that. So thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited to talk about it.
Cool. Before we get into all your work with the Phillies and all the other experiences you've had, I want to go back a bit just so we can understand a little bit of your motivation and your start and how you got things rolling here. So you were a Division I athlete. You played both basketball and softball at UT Chattanooga. Congratulations on that. Clearly,
thank you.
Clearly, you have a love of sports. But why did you decide that it was more than just a hobby for you and something you wanted to turn into a career? And how did that kind of process happen for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've played sports my entire life. I grew up with a younger brother, and so we were super competitive, and my mom and dad were like, do whatever, play whatever, you know, and so we got our hands on just about every sport we could play. And I don't know when it started, but I just knew, like, that's when I lit up the most, right, was anytime I was around sports, and my passion and my enthusiasm just skyrocketed when I was doing something with sports. And so, you know, when you're about to go into college and you're trying to figure out what are you going to study, you know, and you don't really know and you have big decisions to make, you kind of just go with what you love. And the one thing I knew for sure that I loved in life was sports.
Yeah.
And so I did, my undergrad was in exercise science, just because I was thinking, you know, maybe strength and conditioning coach, maybe a softball coach, you know, somehow, some way being involved in sports. Just not really sure what it was going to be yet, and trying to just keep an open mind on, you know, whatever opportunity comes, like in sports, like that's what I want to do. And I took a sports psychology class my senior year of undergrad and was like, what the heck is this?
Oh,
and
cool.
Why have I never heard of this? Yeah. And so it was like a psych 101 class, but for sports psych. And I was obviously, my career of playing was almost over. And I was like, I'm so mad I didn't take this my freshman year and learn some of this and like try to implement it a little bit into my own game. But it was almost too late for that. And so then I realized, like, okay, well, now I want to know everything and anything I can about sports psychology and how the brain works and how it can help us perform both on and off the field and be better human beings and better spouses and just better people. And so I applied and got into grad school, and then I got my master's in sports psychology and motor behavior, which is just a really fancy way of how the mind and the body work together.
Sports psychology and motor behavior sounds cooler. I like that. That's a good title.
Yeah, exactly. It's a mouthful, but it's really simple. It's just how the brain works and how the body works. And luckily my undergrad, you know, I had exercise science as the background. So that was all the body and how the body works. And then my master's was specifically focused on how the mind works with the body. But it's just always been there. Like, you know, you hear people talking about jobs and how some people love their jobs, some people hate their jobs. And I've always, you know, my parents have kind of always instilled in me, like, love what you do, like, every day. You know, the old cliche quote of, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yep.
And I both agree and disagree with that, because it is a lot of work, but I do love it. And loving your job every day is pretty freaking awesome. So I knew almost anything I would do in sports, I knew I would love. That's how I got introduced to sports psychology. It was just through a random sports psych 101 class in my undergrad.
See, I love that too, though. There's a really cool message in there that you don't know when those moments are going to happen, right? Like, the same kind of thing happened
Definitely.
To me.
Definitely.
Yeah, I've shared on this podcast before. Like, I started out as a same very similar story to you. Sports was the place I was happy. Played it all the time. Mm-hmm. Loved it. Thought about it. Watched it. Read about it. Everything. And then I went to college as like a chemistry and biology double major. Like, well, I don't know what I was doing. I was totally lost. But I took like a mass media.
Naturally.
Yeah, I took like a mass media elective one year and was like, oh my gosh, this is it. I want to get into sports television. This is the thing for me. You know, it's like, you don't always know when that moment's going to happen. So it's kind of cool that you were open to that. Is that important? Just kind of staying open in your mind to opportunities?
Definitely. And I tell people that all the time, you know, whether you're trying to get into the sports psych field or whatever field, it's, you have to be open and kind of willing to go places and do things. And, you know, my first internship was with a golf academy. I've never played golf in my life. You know, I've played all sports, but I didn't play golf. But the first opportunity I get is golf. And so it's kind of, you know, unique. And I was like, I am not going to say no to this, because not only can I help golfers with their mental game, but I can also learn about golf. And now I'm obsessed with golf. But again, like, that's what I tell everybody, like, be willing to move, be willing to go do scary things, because you're never going to know what you do like and what you don't like until you do it. And then once you do, like, I just hopped off the phone call with somebody else. We were talking about, you know, how you actually learn more from bad experiences. You know, you learn, like, okay, I know I don't like this. I know that's not how you do this. Then you do from good experiences where you're like, okay, that was cool. Like, but you learn what you like and what you don't like in different experiences. And that can't happen if you say no to things, or if you only say yes to certain things, or if you only do if you're, you know, football player, only do things with football. Like, try other things, do other things, and being willing is a huge part of that. Like, there's no way I would be working with the Phillies if I wasn't willing to do other things first.
See, that's so interesting too, because you hear so many people who talk about, oh, I did this internship and I didn't like it, and now it's a failure, and I'm running out of time, and this, that, and the other thing, and they're like, they're like stacking up all these decisions like in their mind, like they're telling themselves it's a failure. When I'm trying to like say back to them, I'm like, no, finding out what you don't like to do is just as important, right? Like going through that experience of saying, whoa, I don't want to spend my life doing that. Like that's actually a win. That's not a loss.
Yeah, absolutely. And chances are that even though you think that that internship, you know, you don't want to do that, or that specific path isn't right for you, chances are whatever you did there or learned there, you can take into what you're supposed to be doing. Like, even if it's total opposite.
So
like,
true.
There's probably something you can take away from that. Like, so mine was, my undergrad was exercise science, and my first internship in undergrad was as a strength coach. And I'm not even close to a strength coach right now, but I'm a mental strength coach. And so I have players talk to me all the time about workouts and the demands. And I know what they're talking about when they say something like, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what you mean. And some of them are surprised and some of them are like, oh, that's awesome. But it's like, I can almost guarantee you that whatever you've been through, it's going to help in once you finally get to that dream job or whatever it is that you're trying to get to and figure out. Like, don't, like you said, don't write it off as a failure, write it off as, I kind of call them lily pads. Right?
Because
sometimes you got to hop from lily pad to lily pad until you get to the pond. Right? And sometimes then you're in a one pond and then you have to go lily pad to another bigger pond. Right? Until you get to the pond that you want to be on. But like, they're stepping stones. And I think a lot of people get like discouraged because they're like, what? I didn't get my dream job. I didn't get this. I'm not there. But it's like, you got to kind of crawl through the gross stuff, the bad stuff first, and figure out what you like and what you don't like, who you want to work with, who you don't want to work with. What's your niches? What's your best at? You know, you may think you're best at one thing and then maybe you find you're actually really good at something else. And so it's a huge piece of it is having an open mind. And that's not just in your career. That's in life too. And I tell my athletes all the time, like, always have an open mind, always trying to find what's the new thing you can learn. What can I grow from this? If I've heard this talk before, what's one thing I can hear differently in this talk? Or can I pay a little bit more attention and find one new piece of advice or one new technique or skill that maybe I haven't learned before?
It's funny. I had this
I haven't heard it put that way before.
Yeah, totally. I had this visual as you were talking too of all these Phillies players like jumping on lily pads across the pond. So I'm a big visualization guy, and now that's going to be stuck in my head all day. Like, I'm going to be picturing, right, you know, all these different athletes at different levels jumping across lily pads. You got to visualize.
Yep, that's all we do. Jump on
that's how you spend your days. Yep, that's it. All done. That's my day.
That's the secret.
So I want to go back to the beginning a little bit still, because I'm going to get off track here a thousand times in this conversation because I'm really into everything to say, and I'm just going to jump around. But okay, so you were a student athlete, and I think this is one of the things I find extremely important. And again, it's kind of framing your mind around the experience, where a lot of people come to me and they'll say, I was a student athlete, so I never had a chance to intern, so I'm behind everybody else. And I'm like, no, you have a different set of skills. So tell us, as not only a mental skills coach but also someone who was a student athlete, what kind of skills and things were you able to pick up and leverage in the rest of your life from just being a student athlete?
Yeah. So I couldn't agree more with that statement. And I think you can either, again, having that open mind versus fixed mindset, right? If you're an athlete, if you were a student athlete and now you're trying to get a job and you're like, well, I didn't have an internship, there's nothing I can do. That's a very fixed mindset, right? That's, well, this is all I had. This is all I could do. So that's all I got. So I'm done. I'm never going to do anything. Or you can have the open mindset of like, yes, this is the only thing I did, but it's so much more than that. And that alone can get me to where I want to be. Like, I know companies who are looking for student athletes because, you know, the competitive edge, the drive, the time management skills, the grind, you know, you get better every day, you know, go until you can't go any further. You know, that they don't have to motivate you. You have all of that. My senior year, I had somebody come in at a career fair and talk to the student athletes, and she had a PowerPoint, and there was about 50 words on there that was like, every one of these words should be on your resume because these are skills that you have that you don't even realize you have.
So true.
But everything we just said, you know, it's a huge part of it. And I think time management's a big one, but I think confidence and I think enthusiasm are two very common words and verbs that have described me in my job and why people are telling me that I'm getting these opportunities. So when I'm talking to people who are interested in jobs, I'm like, you have to be confident in your skill, especially in mental skills, right? If we aren't confident and we're trying to teach guys to be confident, it ain't gonna work, you know? Like,
right.
you gotta be confident in what you're saying. And then also just being enthusiastic. Like, if you love your job, like, you shouldn't have to force that. But if you're not, like, it's gonna be hard to get a job if you're not pumped about it, or excited about it, or anything like that. And so I think those two things that we learn as athletes, you know, be enthusiastic, be pumped about the game, be confident in your ability, go straight into the workforce too. And if you find people and they're like, this person's pretty confident and they're pretty enthusiastic, it'll be really hard to not get that job, I would imagine, unless you're just not qualified, you know, don't have the actual qualifications. But if you have the qualifications and you're confident in your qualifications and then you're enthusiastic about the opportunity, it'd be a win-win-win.
It's so true. Like, when I was in charge of hiring when I was the news director at Fox Sports Northwest, and I was in charge of all of our hiring, it was almost like people were getting bad advice where they were telling them, like, come in and you got to be cool and you got to be professional and you got to be buttoned up and you got to be tight. And I'm like, I'm looking for somebody that's excited. Like, they're passionate. They're exuding confidence and they're excited to be here and they can't wait for this opportunity. Like, that's what I want to see. So I love that you're saying that, because it's like changing your whole frame and perspective on everything you approach. Like, do it with enthusiasm and do it with excitement, because that really does translate. And enthusiasm and excitement can overcome sometimes a lack of certain skills, because then you look like you're coachable. You can be trained, all that kind of thing. I think that's important.
No doubt. So, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So let's talk about mental skills training on a high level, and then we'll dig in there in a little bit. It's clearly, this is not new science, and yet it's become somewhat more mainstreamed. Liken it a little bit to like analytics. Everybody's always crunched data numbers. Everybody's always looked at information and processed information. But analytics kind of had its Moneyball moment where everybody started talking about it. Brad Pitt's starring in it. Everybody's talking about it, and it's become like this huge thing. Clearly, mental skills training is becoming a lot more mainstream now.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? What do you think brought it out into the sunlight? What do you attribute the mainstreaming of the mental skills training to?
Honestly, social media.
I think there's a big
piece that I try to talk about when I'm on podcasts, and it's an educating piece, right? And it's the difference between mental health and mental performance, right? Those are two different things. So mental health is more of your clinical psychology work. So, right, it's your depression, your clinical anxiety, suicidality, eating disorders, things of that sort. That's mental health. And then mental performance is specific to like on-field athletic performance or in the boardroom or whatever your performance is. It doesn't have to be sport, but it's confidence, motivation, resiliency, enjoyment, composure, all of those things, right? So those are two separate things, but those are both needed in whether you're a regular person who doesn't perform or whether you're a performer. And my opinion on that is, if you're alive and you are breathing and you are human, you are performing in some way, shape, or form. If you are a dad, you are performing. If you are a sibling, you're performing. If you have a job, you're performing for that job. And all of those things come with that. But I think the most important part and how this got out is mental health got out, right? Is that we had public figures, we had famous athletes, we had famous actors and actresses and all these people in the spotlight who came out and were like, hey, I struggle with these. I have mental health issues. I'm struggling with clinical anxiety or depression, and making that more mainstream. Mm-hmm. And I think that had a ripple effect of once mental health is talked about and heard about and become a normal conversation, so does mental skills, right? And like you said, mental skills have been around for forever. If you talk to, you know, some of the people in the baseball world who have been in baseball for 40, 50 plus years, you know, they may not call it mental skills, but if you have a conversation with them, they're talking about visualization and breathing and how to calm themselves down in pressure situations and techniques and skills that they use. It just didn't have a title on it. And they didn't have somebody specifically there working with them, training them on that and actually spending time and money and effort on training the mental aspect of their game. It was kind of like you're either good at it or you're not, right? Kind of thing. And so I think the way it exploded is the mainstream of social media and mental health being out there, and then people realizing, okay, this is especially dominant in high pressure performers. which includes, you know, high-level professional athletes. And by that, we have to do something about it. We have to get some training in. And I think pro sports are kind of setting the standard. And then the ripple effect down to, you know, college athletes and then high school athletes and on down to like 10 and 8-year-olds. I've worked with a 9-year-old before.
Oh my gosh.
But it's cool though. It's continuing to grow. Even like 3 years ago when I graduated with my master's, there wasn't a lot of opportunities, and now it's probably doubled or tripled. And I think it's only going to continue to go up because more and more people are starting to realize that we're doing everything we can physically and we're like maxed out physically, like whether it's an hour rule or like physically, like these athletes can't take it anymore, that the only thing we can do now is train mentally. And so it's becoming more of a priority than it ever has been.
Unlocking that mental side. That's really interesting. So do you find that there are certain sports or certain organizations that are more open to it? Or is it kind of a, like if you're in this industry, so do you know, like, mm-hmm. I know these teams are really into it and this sport is not, and this is like, is there a kind of an unspoken word on like who's adopting this more than others?
Yeah, for sure. I would say Major League Baseball is probably leading, just because, you know, baseball is such a game of failure. You know, everybody knows it's a game of failure and it's a game of a lot of downtime, right? A game's 3-ish hours, right? And I think if you break it down, you know, they're playing like actually less than 20 minutes is like actual action. And there's so much downtime that they have so much time to think that it's a great opportunity to practice and work on this. So I think they're one of the leading, but I know NFL is trying and working on it. NHL is working on it. NBA is working on it. So they're trying. And then I think it's rippling effect down to colleges, and colleges are trying to figure out too of how to hire a clinical person to handle the mental health and then how to handle a mental skills coach to handle the mental performance side of things. You definitely know who's doing it and who's not. And almost, I think all but 4 teams in Major League Baseball have someone on staff, at least one person. Some of the teams have a team of people. And then the people who don't have them, I think, contract people out. So they still like got people working right with their athletes.
How did you get started with the Phillies? How did that relationship start?
So backtrack, I graduated grad school in December. And in February, I actually started an internship. So I think that's important. I have my master's degree and there was no job opportunity. So my first job out of my master's was a internship, which I think is important. And, you know, people think you just graduate and bam, you get the best job ever. And I had the best internship ever, but it was still an internship. And so I actually went and interned with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I got into the baseball world there and was with them for a season. And then the internship was over and I was still trying to find, stay in the sports psychology world, because they weren't hiring full time at the time. And I knew it was time to start making some money and hopefully I could make money doing what I love. And so, I went to New York City and worked for a private practice up there, called Sports Strata, and for about a year and a half. And it was really cool because I got to work with not just athletes, but all kinds of performers. So I worked with actresses and CEOs of companies and surgeons and firefighters and dancers. And it was just really cool to like see how the same stuff that the athletes do, everybody else needs to work on, whether you're a mom, like I said earlier, everybody's a performer. And so that was really cool to stretch out. Again, that was unfamiliar territory for me. You know, a fixed mindset would have said, no, I only want to work in sports. And part of my job was sports, but part of it wasn't. And so it was really having an open mind about that too. And then I did realize with that, like, again, that my most passion and enthusiasm comes when I'm working with athletes. And so I was just looking for other opportunities to get back into either baseball or another sport to get back to that team aspect. And I did a couple interviews and landed the job with the Phillies and just finished year 2. And so we are prepping for year number 3 currently. That's kind of how internship, went to another job that was outside of what I kind of thought I wanted to do or what I thought I needed to do, and then ended up right exactly where I needed to be. So
how does it work with
it? Open-minded.
Yeah, no, of course. I like that. I like that. I keep thinking of fixed mindset in my head. Like I'm taking notes as we do this, for my own self and as a dad, so I can work with my kids too.
Yeah.
You work for the Phillies. and it's a big organization, and they cover a lot of ground with all the minor league teams, et cetera. So how does it work for you? Are you on the road going to different organizations? Do you do work with individuals who are on a slump? Does it always kind of change? Are you setting up programs that other stakeholders on the ground execute? Like, how does this operate for you? Break it down.
Yeah. Love that question. And love the specifics of the question. So we have four members of our mental skills team. And two of them speak Spanish, so they're bilingual.
Okay.
And work predominantly with our Spanish speaking players, who are from all over. We have Venezuelans, Dominican Republic, Mexico. And so they are predominantly working with our Spanish speakers. And then we have myself and my boss, who predominantly work with the English speakers. And we split up the teams. So I have six teams and I travel around to those six teams, meeting mostly individual meetings, one-on-one meetings with players, and then an occasional group meeting here and there with different groups. You know, we might do a pitcher's meeting or a hitter's meeting or a catcher's meeting or outfield meeting, something like that, or even a coach's meeting. But most of my work is done on a one-on-one basis. And we do in the minor leagues, we require every player to meet with us once a month, just because we are really trying to work on the stigma of, you know, mental skills and mental performance. And, you know, a lot of people still think it's mental health. And, you know, you only go talk to Hannah when things are going really, really wrong, you know,
right,
or when, you know, what's hitting the fan. And so we try to be proactive about it instead of reactive and make sure that we're meeting with you guys once a month, whether you're playing the best you've ever played or you're playing the worst you've ever played. That way we're checking in. We know how things are going. We're up to date. And if things are going poorly, we can talk about it. And if things are going great, we can talk about it. I think a lot of people hit the panic button when things are going wrong and don't pay any attention when things are going right. And so if things are going right, we also need to create awareness around that. Why are things working right now? You know, why is everything going well? Why are you hitting well right now? Why are you pitching well right now? Let's try to write this down and remember this. So when we do slump, because we know we will, because we always do in baseball, it's ups and downs constantly, that we have something to go back to and look at and be like, hey, I was doing this, this, and this, and things were going well. Am I doing this, this, and this right now? And chances are we're not. And so many conversations I have where they're like, when did I stop doing that? And I'm like, I don't know, but that's what I'm here for. You know,
yeah,
just to remind you, like, of the things, most of the stuff you already know, it's already inside of you, but you gotta be pretty aware. And that's something I talk about a lot in this sport, is in any performance, is being aware. Do you know what's going on upstairs? Do you know what's going on in your head? Because if you don't know, we can't do a whole lot about it. But if you do know, we can take it, we can adjust it, we can keep it, we can move some things around and make it work for you and try to create that top-notch performance. But yeah, we travel around, we meet with everybody once a month at minimum, but our door is always open. And, you know, we have a handful of guys who like to communicate more than just a month. And then we're kind of on call all the time. So especially like right now, it's the off season, so everybody's kind of doing their own thing. But we're like on call and checking in with the players right now.
It's so cool because I've interviewed and talked with so many players, minor leagues, NFL, whatever, interviewed throughout my career. And one of the things they'll talk about so often and embrace now and talk about is that they've felt so lonely early getting on. And I'm not trying to sound like, say, like you're just a sounding board to them, but to know that the organization is investing in their mental skills and performance and trying to get the best out of them and giving them somebody to talk to and bounce ideas off of, that has to be a powerful feeling for them as well. Like, I'm sure it's hugely beneficial to you and to the organization, but I'm sure it's incredible for them as well, just to unlock some of themselves.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. But like being that safe place for them, that's part of what I am. Sometimes I call myself a big sister or sometimes a mom with these youngins coming in, but who were born in 2000, you know,
whatever.
But it's a safe place for them to come in, for them to talk about what's going on. And, you know, nobody is going to know about it but us. It's very confidential. And so they can talk about it. And we're there. We're on the ground. So we know what they're going through. Whereas, you know, they may try to reach out for support from somebody else who doesn't really understand the real grind that they go through and what their day to day looks like. And so we are just non-judgmental, listening ears and supporting them and coaching them and educating them on the best version of themselves, helping them discover the best version of themselves, which is kind of the fun part because there's no cheat sheet to this. You don't do this and you're confident, right? What makes you confident could make somebody else very, very nervous. And so that's the fun part of our job, is kind of picking and figuring out what is going to work to make you the best and perform the best. You know, some guys need to be amped up and screaming and listen to hardcore rock before a game to play their best. And other guys need to be dead quiet, practicing mindfulness, listening to the sound of the waves.
Yeah.
You know, and we just have to know that, and we got to figure it out. And it's up to us to figure it out. And then it's up to us to help keep them accountable and make sure they're doing everything they can to take care of their mind. Cause we know they're taking care of their body. You know, we have nutrition and weights and workouts and training and physical therapy and all that good stuff. And we just want to make sure that we're checking in inside too.
So our audience is full of sports crazed job seekers, right? These are people who are, they're your kinesiology majors, they're sports management majors, they're business majors, they're career changers who want to work in sports, or they want to advance their career. They're already working in sports. So let's talk about them a little bit. In my convoluted way of thinking, I always look at them almost like athletes who are going under they're having the pressure and the stress on them right now to achieve some goal for themselves or to get started in their career or whatever it may be. And a lot of times they're talking to me about the stress or the frustration or whatever it may be. So let's talk about stress. They're feeling the pressure of career and life. What is the best way to handle that stress? What can they do to make that, turn that into a positive in some ways?
Yeah. So one, these are my kind of people.
me too.
And I wish I could meet every single person listening to this. So first thing to do with stress is to normalize it. Okay. Like, whatever your situation is, whether you are looking for a job, whether you have a job and you don't like it, or whether you just nailed the job that you want and you're nervous and stressed out about making good impression, or maybe you have your dream job and you're stressed about keeping it, or whatever it is, like, the first part is to normalize it. Like, life is stressful. Work is stressful. Like, achieving your dreams is stressful. And that's okay. And the best thing I can do about stress, the best advice I can give you about stress is to sit down, write out the things that are making you stressful, okay? And then once you have that list, whether it's 2 things or whether it's 50 things, I want you to try to separate it into the things that are inside your control and the things that are outside of your control, okay? And I can almost guarantee you, if you do that, most of the things that are causing you stress are things that are outside of your control, whether it's a coworker, a boss, a coach, whatever it is, most of it is outside of your control. Just like in the game of baseball, you have a conversation with a player and we're like, what can you actually control in the game? And they're like, I don't know, like, because there's so little. And yeah. So once you have that list of things you can control and things you can't control, I want you to write at the top of the list on the side that you can control and write focus. And that's what I want you to focus on the things that you can control. And then on the other side, on the things that all of these things are outside of your control, I want you to scratch out uncontrollables, and I want you to write either ignore or forget or throw it out, right? Because those are the things that you can't be wasting your time and energy and effort on, the things that are outside of your control. And I guarantee you the reason you're stressed is because most of those reasons. And then go back to your list and focus on those things on the left or right side of your list, on the controllable things, and put all of your time and energy into controlling what you can control. And typically those things are your attitude, you know, your effort, but also your preparation. Are you prepared for that job interview? Are you prepared for that presentation? Are you prepared for whatever it is that you're going to do? Because chances are, if you have a good attitude, right, which is what we're talking about with enthusiasm and confidence, and your effort's there, right? And effort goes straight into preparation. Like, did you put forth the effort? If you have a good attitude, you've done your effort, and you're prepared, chances are stress levels are going to go way down, right? But if you're not prepared, if you have a bad attitude, if you have put in little or no effort, and then you're worried about, well, how much money are they going to offer me? I don't even know if I'm going to get this job. This guy's a jerk. This girl's a jerk. Whatever it is, chances are your stress is going to be through the roof. And so the best advice I can give you, without just being cliche and saying, you know, control the controllables, is that make a list. What is making you stressful? What is making you stressed out? Go through the list and determine what can you actually control on that list. I guarantee you it's going to be like a 90-10 percentage, 80-20 max. Like, most of the things you're stressed about are things that are completely outside of your control.
See, I love that too, because you can't control whether somebody offers you a job, but you can control all the steps that you do to prepare, to get the right skills, to research the job, to be prepared for the interview, to learn everything you need to know about the organization. There are plenty of steps you can't control in this process.
No doubt.
But you can't be tied to the outcome because you don't control that. And that dovetails perfectly into my next question, because so often in sports, we talk about outcome. Like, we as fans judge people based on their outcome, right? If they hit a home run, they're awesome. If they strike out, they're bad. You know, but that's really the wrong approach, isn't it? Like, in life too, to focus just on the outcome rather than the right approach. Am I looking at that the right way?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. It's process versus outcome, and exactly what you said. And sometimes the outcomes do matter, but most of the time the outcome is out of your control. Can you control if you win a baseball game? No, there's a million factors that go in. Can you even control, like, think about this as a pitcher. Can you even control if you throw a strike or not?
No.
And most people are like, and you know, sometimes, everyone's like, right? The answer is no. You could throw a perfect strike and they could crush it.
Yep.
Home run. You could throw a perfect strike and the ump could screw you over, ball four.
Right.
Right? You can't even control the outcome of that pitch. But like you said, what you can control is the grip on the pitch, the mindset before the pitch. Have you been practicing that pitch? Have you mastered that pitch, right? The preparation, your confidence in that pitch. Those are the things you can control. And then once that ball leaves your hand, it's completely outside of your control. And so it's almost accepting that and knowing that, okay, I have done everything in my power to execute this pitch, or to execute this pitch in a boardroom, right? Another kind of pitch, but you're still pitching. And if I've done everything I can, then the rest, you just kind of got to let it go and learn to know. And like, I guarantee that feeling alone, right? Knowing that I've done everything I can to execute X, Y, or Z. I've literally done everything I can. That feeling alone will decrease stress. You know, the reason stress happens is when you feel like your skill isn't going to match up to what it is, whatever you're trying to do. And typically that comes from not being prepared. But absolutely no, focusing on the process and being able and willing to, okay, if I do everything right here, I still may not get the job.
Yeah.
But by God, I got better. I got better from this. I learned from this. And then if you don't get the job or you don't get whatever, ask them why. Learn from that. So the next job interview, the next job, if you get fired, whatever it is, ask them why. Figure out why. You want to constantly, that open mindset, but that constantly looking for growth and looking for ways to get better. And chances are, if you did all of those things to prepare, you're getting better. You got better. Even if you didn't get the job, if you did everything right, you got better. And also, chances are, you know, I'm not saying do these things and you'll have success. I'm saying if you do these things, you're giving yourself the best opportunity for success, which is all you can ask for. Because then that's kind of out of your control. But at least you know you've done everything in your power to be successful in that moment. Just like that pitcher, you've done everything in your power to be successful, and sometimes you are, and sometimes they hit a home run off of you, even if you pitched the perfect pitch.
Yeah.
And it's being willing to do that. And if you can say, I did everything I could in my power and he crushed it, hats off to him. And sometimes that happens, and that is life, and that's why we love life. And as athletes, you love to compete, and we love baseball because you could do everything right and still fail.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest concept, and that's why I think mental skills are so big, is because you're literally, everything is going wrong, but you're doing everything you can to control it, and you have to stay calm and collective and figure out how to work through that, even, and not change a thing, right? Because you're doing everything right. And the next time you could do the same thing and you strike him out, right? The same exact scenario and you strike him out the next time. So I think you're absolutely right. You've got to focus on the process, not the outcome. And you have to focus on the things that you can control.
I love earlier when you made the distinction too, that, you know, some people are motivated by heavy rock music. They need to get themselves pumped up. Others want to meditate, you know, like everybody's different. So these sometimes people trying to peddle that there's like a key to unlock success. It's like, no, everybody's different. You're right. Everybody has a different formula that gets them there. But with that said, and with that caveat, as you look back at the people, not just the athletes, but the people you've worked with, whether it's surgeons or ballet dancers or whoever it may be, are there certain things, are there patterns that you see that say, okay, most successful people, they do these sort of things really well? Do you see that?
Yeah. So I would say the biggest one, the most common one, is the people who are constantly looking to learn and grow.
Okay. I love that.
And find the next edge. Yeah. Because like, Like, I mean, so a perfect example is, like, you know, everybody in the minor leagues wants to, and they have one goal, right? What's the goal when you're in the minor leagues?
Get to the majors.
To get to the majors, right? Every player, what's your goal? Make it to the big leagues.
Yep.
Great. Like, I want you to make it to the big leagues. Then we have guys make it to the big leagues. Then what?
Right.
Right? Well, yeah, the goal was to make
now?
It here.
Right,
the goal wasn't to stay.
Yeah.
Right? The goal wasn't to be in the big leagues for 15 years. The goal wasn't to be a Hall of Famer. It was just to make it. All I have to do is make it, and then I'm good. And so I think it's the people who can, no matter how good they are, I don't care if you've been doing your job for 30 years or for 30 days or 30 seconds, you are always trying to find ways to get better and to improve. And that comes, again, with that open mindset of, I call it a white belt mentality. A lot of people kind of refer back to this, and it's basically like, approach every day like it's your first day. So think about, if you're an athlete, like, think about the first day you ever played the game that you played, or you have a job right now. Think about the first day on the job, right? You were an open book, a blank slate. You have everything in the world to learn about that job, about that sport, about whatever it is you're doing. And you learned a lot. And it's like, how can we, at some point along our careers, we get into this like, oh yeah, I got this. I know everything about this. I'm the expert. I can do this. And part of it's true. You are right. You've been doing this for a long time, especially people who have 30 plus years of doing whatever it is that they do. You have that experience, and that's awesome. But that does not mean there is nothing else to learn and nothing else to grow and nothing else to get better. It's the minute we stop thinking we can learn that we start to fall and lose our success. But it's the athletes, it's the people, it's the CEOs of companies who are always trying to find what's the next edge, what's the best thing we can do, what do our employees need, what do I need, what's the best version of me constantly, because that changes too. You know, what might have worked for you and motivated you and fired you up in college may not work in the real world, and that's okay too. And figuring out what works for you now in this stage of life is vital to your success. And so I think that's the biggest, most common thing I've seen is with the people who are incredibly successful, they're always trying to find ways to make them better, almost to a fault too. Like, they're like, they've got 10 different kinds of foam rollers, you know, to stretch. And it's like, dude, chill out. And he's like, hey, I got to figure out what works best for me. I got to figure out, and maybe a different stretch works better after a different game, depending on what I did that game. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like this ever going process, never ending, always trying to evolve and get better and find the edge, the next best thing, to continue my growth and my development, no matter what level you're at.
A side note before we get into the next question, you're really good at this. Like, I am like engaged. Like, I can't, I'm hanging on every one of your words. Like, you are a rock star. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
So
thank
you. I can see why this, I'm like ready to run through a wall for it. Anyway, every Monday.
You're asking really good questions, though.
Oh, well, that's why it's working well. Right.
It is.
Yeah, my process.
I've been on a lot of podcasts. Some of them are pretty tough to get through.
Oh,
so
good.
This is a really good one.
That makes me happy. Thank you. So
yeah,
every Monday. Every Monday. Wait, you've been on other podcasts? That's not cool. No, I'm kidding.
Sorry.
every Monday, you share a short 1 minute video tying back into the social media you talked about earlier. You share a short 1 minute video under the hashtag Mental Sweat Monday. And I'm saying this not just because you're a guest. I really love these little sessions. You hit the nail on the head quickly. You make a really strong point, but it's like you get a lot of detail and depth in there for just being on for a minute. Like, it's really cool. And I suggest everybody connects with you on LinkedIn, follows you, all that good stuff. But one of my absolute favorites you did recently was on everybody, like a lot of people trying to take the easy way out of everything. Like,
yeah,
we've turned into a, as I say all the time, we've turned into a just add water society where everybody wants everything instantaneously. Like, I just want to have it right now. Like, I expect it. I deserve it. I expect it. I want it right now. Just add water. So what's your message for people with that kind of a mindset?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Like,
good. Okay, we're done here.
Even if it does happen, it's not. Like, even if it does, like, okay, let's just add water. Let's add water, and then it blossoms, and it's huge, and it's massive. It's probably going to die pretty quickly. Like, you know, or shrivel up. Like, I think of a sponge or a flower or a plant, you know. It's probably, the longevity of that life is going to be as long as the time you spent to do it. Like, think about that. I love this analogy, and I'm going off that analogy, right?
Yeah, go.
I'm going an analogy further.
I love it.
Is the amount of time you spend watering it is how long the life's going to be. So if you work for 10 years to do something, it's going to last a long time. It's going to be worth it. It's going to be value. There's going to be the bottom of the iceberg, right? That's right. If you know the picture of an iceberg, right?
Right.
Just the tip is outside, but underneath is this huge, the roots of the iceberg, or so-called, you know? And so it's however much time and energy you're willing to put in is how much time and energy you're going to get out of it. Like, and you're just not going to be successful. No, you don't work out one time a week and expect to be the fittest person in the world. You don't eat healthy one time a week and expect to be skinnier, right? Or lose weight. It's the same thing that goes with your mindset. You can't listen to the podcast one time and think I'm solid mentally, right? You have to be doing things on a regular basis. And I know it's super frustrating. And it's almost more frustrating for those people who see those little successes so quickly, because that may come back to haunt them in the end, right? It's because you didn't really do anything to earn that success.
Right.
If you got really lucky one time, it's going to come back to get you. And maybe you're going to be less prepared for something else, or maybe you get fired because you got the job by some miracle, but you don't know anything about the company, kind of what you were saying. And
yeah.
So, no, I think as much time as you're willing to put in it is how long it's going to last. And it is, it's such a quick fix society. Do this, find the easy way out. And that's the message on one of my Mental Sweat Monday videos, was like, stop trying to find the easy way out. Nothing, the old cliche saying, nothing worth having is easy, right? People don't play baseball because it's easy. Like, people don't get to the big leagues because it's easy. They do it because it's hard as heck, you know? And that's what's so rewarding. And then that's another thing I've talked about on my videos is, you know, the thrill of success comes from the possibility of failure, right? Every time you played, if every time you played a sport or every time you did a job interview, you got the job, or you beat a team by 60 points if you're playing basketball or something, you know, like if every time you played it was easy, it wouldn't be worth it. It wouldn't feel good. You know, it's not worth it. It's like, think about a basketball analogy, right? Would you rather beat a team by 60 or would you rather beat a team by a buzzer beater? Like, you're getting better. You know, and if you're like, oh, by 60, then like you like the easy way out. Like, or if you're like, no, I want the tooth and nail game because I know I'm going to get better, and then we win, and that one's way sweeter. Like, that victory is way sweeter because the chance of failure was way greater. And that's what fires you up. When you work your tail off or something and you get it, you're going to feel so much better about everything. Versus if you barely do anything and you get it, you're going to be like, oh, shit, that was pretty lucky.
Yeah.
Right? Then what? Then what? Then what are you going to do after that? You know, but if you work and you grind and you get something, maybe that you didn't think you were going to get, or that somebody else should have got, but you got, and you knew you know you grinded and you did everything you could, like, that is about as rewarding as it gets. And so it's don't do quick fixes. Like, nothing worth it is a quick fix. Nothing worth it is going to happen quickly, right? You don't just hop into your pond. You got to go through the lily pads. You got to crawl through the crap to get to where you want to be. And people just see where people are. Like, people are like, you work for the Phillies. How do I do that? And I'm like, you fail a lot.
Yeah.
You do 3 internships. You go to get your master's. You move to New York City. You work with golf, a sport you've never worked with before. You do all these crazy things. And then you might be able to get the job that you want really bad, you know? And mm-hmm. people don't see that. And nobody wants to hear that, but it's true. Like, and if you're listening to this, go do something right now. Like, go do something right now that's scary or that you don't want to do, because the longer you put that off, the longer, the farther away that pond is. But get on a lily pad, try to get to the next lily pad, get to the next lily pad, and then next thing you know, in 5-10 years, you're in the pond, versus complaining about not being in the pond right now, and then you're never going to make it.
Here we go again. I got pictures of Bryce Harper dancing on lily pads. I can't get out of my head now.
It's going to
be
the lily pads
all day. I'm going to have Phillies dancing on lily pads. It's awesome. we'll finish up with this, because
awesome.
I have a feeling you and I could talk for hours, but I think that you probably have better things to do with the rest of your day. So I'll jump to the final question.
Okay.
Where do you see this side of the industry in the future? Like, where is it going from here? Is it more just getting more teams to adapt this and embrace it? Or is there something else that can be done here, and we're in kind of the infancy of the mental skills training side of things? What do you see in the future?
Yeah, I definitely think we're in the infancy stages. I think it's going to continue to grow. I see it being in every college. I see it being in every professional sport. I see maybe even people having their own people on the side, you know, just like, it's just like strength and conditioning, you know. That's what I can hope for, is that it turns into strength and conditioning. You know, everybody knows that in order to perform, you got to be strong physically. You got to, regardless of what your sport is, you got to be lean, fast, strong, whatever your physical needs are, we all know the importance of that. And I think the physical aspects of life have taken over social media the last couple of years, right? Like before and after pictures and diets and all of that stuff. Like everybody knows we have to exercise. And I hope and I think eventually, you know, it may be 20 years, eventually it's going to be like, okay, we know we need to run to stay healthy. And it's going to be like, okay, we know we need to work on our whatever self-talk, meditation, mindfulness, visualization, energy regulation, whatever it is, in order to perform at our best. Like, it's going to be a no-brainer. You wake up, okay, got to meditate, like shower, brush my teeth, meditate, out the door, you know, whatever. And I know some people are already doing that. And so I think I do strongly believe we're only going to go up from here. And I think the science is going to start backing it more, because it's obviously something that's more difficult to track, you know, than the physical things, because a lot of it's the intangibles, right? You don't know how to measure confidence. And I think we're going to start discovering ways to do that and figuring out how we can really measure this and grow it and give it to people and like prove to people that this is going to literally make you a better performer. Just like being stronger is, being mentally stronger is going to help you too. And I mean, you have a conversation with somebody and they believe in it. And it's just a matter of, are you willing to put the time, the effort, maybe the money into doing it? And I think that's where we're on hold right now, is people aren't willing to invest in it so much yet, but it's coming. I truly believe it's coming. Just like you pay a monthly gym membership, you're going to pay somebody to help you be the best you can mentally for whatever it is your performance is.
Well, Hannah, when you write your book, I will buy it. I'm just letting you know now.
I am planning on writing a couple, hopefully.
I kind of figured that. I got a vibe there that there was probably a book in the works, because you should. And definitely. I think you'd be great at it. So you should do that and I will buy it. But in the meantime, can you tell everybody where you are most active on social media and where they can follow you?
Yeah, so I am definitely most active on Instagram. That's my social media of choice currently. So my Instagram is just my first and last name. So it's just Hannah Huseman. And like Brian said earlier, I do a Mental Sweat Monday video every Monday. It's just a 1-minute snippet of a mental skill check-in, something you can be doing and practicing, again, trying to create that mainstream. But I'm pretty active on LinkedIn too. But if you're trying to direct message me, probably Instagram's the best. And I'm on Twitter also, but just Hannah Huseman and you'll find me on all three of those.
Well, that's awesome. And I know I follow you on LinkedIn and I see all your videos there. So everybody can check there as well and follow Hannah and all the things she's sharing. Cause I'm telling you, if you like this, it's just more of it out there that she shares. So thank you, Hannah, for coming on the show. And
yes, Brian, thank you so much for having me.
It was great. I got a lot to digest. I'm going to go back and listen to this all again now and take some more notes. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I sincerely hope you got as much out of that as I did. Hannah is a baller. I can't wait to have her on the show again. There's like 15 questions I left sitting on the floor. Like, as soon as we finished up, I'm like, I wanted to ask her about mental toughness and if that's a real thing or if that's something that can be trained. And like, there's so many things that came into my mind that I wanted to talk about. But I'm telling you, you must follow her on LinkedIn and Instagram. She told you where to follow her. Trust me, she posts such insightful stuff. And I'm telling you, she explains it in such a manner it's easy to process. Like, I love people who are able to take complex things and explain them in a very logical way. It's not mumbo jumbo. It's not crazy words you have to look up to see what they mean. It's not like you're reading a master's or a doctorate paper. She just explains things in such an ease, and I love it. I'm very drawn to it. So please make sure you follow her and check it out. I almost feel lighter when I listen to her. It's like everything falls into place where it's supposed to be. Love it. So excited. Thanks for listening, everyone. And thanks to Hannah for coming on the show. All right, get back to work. Even smarter and more mentally prepared than ever before.